Welcome to the lobby of Film Corner. The slightly sticky floors.
The surly adolescence.
The claggy, sort of claggy bits of old yellow popcorn adhering to the sort of sweaty glass on the front of a old, knackered old popcorn machine.
The sinister visible leak from the disabled toilet. the stairs awash with whatever's coming out of there.
A tired man stands holding a tired sausage.
And that tired man is Henry Packer. And he's going to lead you by the sausage.
Into Film Corner.
Welcome.
I had a pizza when I went to see this film.
Did you?
In the cinema.
What?
Yeah, the cinema had a pizza. There's a big...
The world has gone mad.
The world's gone completely crazy.
But they to give away the film. Was it to get into the Roman mindset?
I think it was to get into the Italian vibe, wasn't it?
It's going to stink out the joint, isn't it? Did you go for your usual meat feast?
No. I actually went for goat cheese and red onion.
Oh, for God's sake.
I know. So urban.
That's not a gladiator's pizza.
It's not a gladiator's pizza, is it?
That's the pizza of a fey emperor.
Yeah. Yeah, well, no, I did. I was offered. I said, can I have a pizza, please? And they said...
we don't sell that here. We're in a cinema. someone will have to go to Domino's or Pizza Express. It's going to take about half an hour.
They did offer, but they said, do you want to have it in the cinema? I said, bloody hell, no. So I had it in the lobby.
Oh, that's nice.
No, I had it. There was a seating area. There was a seating area with where I was able to eat the pizza.
Name your franchise.
Can I name the franchise?
Yeah.
Curzon.
I also Curzoned. I Curzoned in
Did
Oxford.
Did you Curzon it?
Oh, with my old friend Jim.
You guys.
Oh, lovely.
Yeah.
Cineworld.
Is it?
A failing business.
You see, Ben, what's happened is certain cinema chains are now leaning into this whole, like, experience thing. So you didn't just go out... You eat a goat's cheese and red onion pizza, you know, and you have a drink. You can have a drink in the seat. Now you can have a drink. Sometimes some of them, every man's, they'll bring you like waiter service during the thing.
Well, it's all about killing the other guy, right? That's what's happened. It's become, the high street has become attritional.
Oh.
Right. So, I mean.
Yeah, that's true.
But this time next year, Curzon will also be dispensing Caniston and foot powders. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? They're just, it's going to become a one-stop shop. Where everything can be done.
So Cineworld is like a sort of international company that's really huge, but is failing.
Yeah.
And I've got a Cineworld card, which means I can go as many times as I like. I pay monthly.
Yes.
My partner also does this. She doesn't go very often, but she likes to keep up her...
She's who they depend upon.
Well, but she's doing it consciously in the same way that you might like, do you know what? I'm going to actually buy a book from a local bookshop. She doesn't like the idea of Cineworld going under, so she's happy to keep
propping them up.
Yeah.
But even though, so it is some sort of massive multinational.
It's a megacorp, yeah.
It's a megacorp. It's a struggling megacorp.
But for some reason, she's got this, like, a sort of affinity with it and wants to keep
it. She always gets her ibuprofen from GlaxoSmithKline. It's the same thing, isn't it?
Yeah. She likes the big boys. Yeah,
the big employers, you know, come on.
But yeah, because what I'm describing is, because there's this boutique, there is this new movement towards this boutique experience. You go to the cinema.
The wanker's choice.
Yeah. Whereas you're really burning the candle for the big soulless sort of night out.
90s Megadrome.
The 90s Megaplex.
Yeah.
Just get it down you. Just get it down you.
Yeah.
Absolute basic snacks.
Don't look at the seats before you sit down.
For the love of God, don't look at the seats.
For a reason. It's not just so that you can see the film better.
Yeah.
My Cineworld card actually ran out this week. And so I totted up how many films I'd watched with my Cineworld card to see if I'd made a profit or made a loss on the monthly cost.
Yeah. Of course you did, Ben. I love the way you said that, like that was the most normal thing in the world. Yeah, you tot it up.
And did you get one up on the suits at Cineworld, Ben?
I did.
Was always your long-term
plan. Well
done.
Well done.
Very good. Yeah. Very good.
Well, that's the point of that kind of card, isn't it? It's about.
I saw 24 films.
Yeah.
Wow.
Do you want me to read them out?
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
I saw in a year. Get this for a run. It's a really good rundown, I think.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Scarface.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Die Hard.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
The Muppets Christmas Carol.
Cool.
Which we talked about.
Amazing.
I thought it was fine.
What? Okay, let's not get into that. That's a whole... Okay, we've done that, yeah.
Poor Things.
Oh, yeah, that was good. I like that.
A film that I feel like the whole world went, oh, that's really good. But then like 2 weeks later, it was like, was it? Yeah. Oh, maybe it was not good. Maybe we were all taken in by that guy burping a huge bubble.
I didn't see it.
Willem Dafoe.
It's not as good as I thought at the time or as anyone thought at the time.
But that's true of most films which depart from the kind of script of big skyscraper on fire, guy in a helicopter covered in oil. Yeah. Tumbling to the floor with a machine gun. You know what I mean? Like,
and there's
like
nothing wrong with that. So let's just stick with it, shall we, please? Yeah.
So you think like we have this moment where we go, actually, maybe we want this, but it seems like we don't really.
Of course we don't.
Next is my worst film of the year.
Okay.
A romantic comedy called Anyone But You that I saw almost by mistake. Me and loads of 14-year-old girls watching that guy, Glenn. Perfect face.
Glenn, what's his name? Mr. Jaw.
I know that we're not supposed to say this kind of thing, but I really don't like that guy.
No, me neither.
Yeah. Glenn Powell.
Yeah.
Well, there's no reason for me to say that. He might be a very, very nice man. But there's something about him I find hard to deal with, yeah.
It was him and Sydney Sweeney in a Shakespeare-inspired rom-com.
No, they
where they were quite
say,
heavy-handed with this. This came from Shakespeare. Do you know what I mean?
But they like
He's so muscly, that guy. He's just too muscly. And he was in that film to do with the Hitman that was.
Yes, I couldn't finish that.
That was one of the most irritating things I've ever seen.
We were going to do that film corner, but like too irritating. You were like, "Don't watch it."
I couldn't finish it either. It's called the Hitman.
Then I watched The Zone of Interest. Very good.
Yeah, very good.
Then I watched The Holdovers. Oh, beautiful.
Brilliant.
Near the top of my list for the year. Then I saw Monty Python and the Holy Grail.
Yeah. Yeah, very good.
Past Lives. Fucking amazing. Did you see that?
No.
Yeah, very good. Korean,
Korean heart render.
Korean, do I need to say anything else? Korean, move on. Brilliant.
Oppenheimer.
Of course, which we have discussed. Yeah.
Bit much, wasn't it?
Tribunal heavy.
Too many tribunals.
But you were part of the conversation because you were seeing it.
Exactly.
June
2, which we talked about on Film Corner. Anatomy of a Fall, which we talked about because I went in late and had
God, it's been a good year for films, hasn't it?
It's been really good. Then I saw The Dead Don't Hurt.
Okay.
What's that?
Which was a Viggo Mortensen. He wrote it. He starred in it. He wrote the music for it.
Yeah.
And for all those reasons, it was obviously not very good. Obviously, there's a reason why that doesn't happen. I mean, yeah, it was quite an average film. That's what happens if you do. Like a one man band isn't the best kind of band, is it? And a one man film is just not going to be the best kind of film.
Yeah, it was the cinematic equivalent of a guy with a bass drum on his back and the cymbal on each knee.
Who is the best person for this job? Me. Is it? Or who's the best person for this job? Me. Is it? Are they all? Is it you?
Is it definitely?
Is that the answer for all of the jobs? Are you sure?
No, actually, I'm not giving the answer to every answer. Okay, ask me who's going to do the music. Viggo Mortensen. That's you.
Yeah. Mind you, it's got 85% on Rotten Toms.
It's not bad. It's not a bad film at all. It's pretty good. Yeah.
But he comes with a very big reassurance value, Viggo.
Yeah, he's great. I mean,
you put him in, you assume that even if it's kind of mainstream, it's probably one of those good mainstream ones. It's quite well made.
Yeah. Then I saw the Lord of the Rings trilogy.
Oh, God, yeah, I remember that.
Then I saw Long Legs, which we talked about on this show.
Yes, we did.
Then I saw Pulp Fiction.
Ooh, bit of fun in the cinema.
Really good.
Yeah.
Superman film.
I've not seen it for years and years.
Yeah.
Then I saw Kneecap, which is good.
Mm.
Then saw The Terminator, the original one.
You're doing a good job of seeing some old classics here.
Basically, that's what Cineworld's doing because they're dying and they realise that people aren't seeing films really. But if they stick on old films, people will turn up.
That's quite nice. I like that.
Also, Ben, do you realise... Because I know you think that you've financially got one up on Cineworld, don't you?
Right,
But do you realise that for them to show an old film is much cheaper? So what is it called? Repertory? Do you call it repertory for a film? Once a film is...
I think so. But these are often like re-released, remastered.
Yeah, but
40th anniversary.
But it's cheaper.
Oh, okay.
Because that's why when I went to see Top Gun...
Maverick.
Yeah.
It was only £5 to go and see it. Because it's cost them nothing to get it. So I'm just thinking, Ben, is it possible that they've stacked the numbers against you there? That you've been still...
Maybe I've been done. House always wins.
It might be that you've been slightly done, because all these films, they're all old films that you're mentioning.
Yeah, that's true.
A lot of them are. Anyway, yeah.
The Terminator, I don't know if I mentioned this on the podcast already, there's a really weird bit at the beginning where the film started, but instead of it being the Terminator, it was James Cameron sitting on a chair And he was like, hi, welcome to the 40th anniversary screening of The Terminator.
I think all films should start with that, with the director sitting on a chair going, hi, welcome to this film.
But what was really weird about it is he was like, we've remastered the film. And he was, the subtext was, I'm quite embarrassed by this film and I think it's quite shit. But so really? He was like, yeah, there's some of the sequences look pretty ropey these days. But back in the 80s, we didn't know, you know, we couldn't really film at nighttime very easily. So we had to really overlight everything. It looks terrible. Anyway, and he was just like, he was trying to get his excuses in for why this film looks shit. But everyone's like, we get it. It's 40 years old. And
yeah, we're still happy to see it.
Yeah, but he saw, it was really weird. So you started off with him basically going, this film's not very good. Enjoy.
Also, why is there not like a caveat at the beginning of Avatar for all the dialogue and the basic ideas being absolute turd?
We absolutely nailed the special effects in this, but yeah, as a result, we were
everything
very,
else
very
is turd.
We can only do so much. The story's dog shit. Enjoy.
But you're right, Henry, like a really honest appraisal by the director before you watch him would be quite good on all films.
This was the focus for me. This is what I did. This is what I failed at.
Yeah. We wanted Tom Hanks. Unfortunately, he couldn't do it. We had to get Glenn Powell. And as a result, it's quite a weird film.
It just doesn't work. Thank you for coming. Okay.
Then I saw Top Gun Maverick.
Very good.
Then I saw Megalopolis.
Oh, yes.
Which I think is tying for worst film of the year. I actually fell asleep during it. I couldn't.
Yeah.
I really kind of want to see that, but kind of can't face it.
No, don't do it. Then I saw Point Break.
Classic. Very good.
And then I saw Anora.
Oh, what's that?
Which I think is my film of the year.
Is it?
Oh. What
is that?
But I can't work out if it's just recency bias and I just saw it and enjoyed it, so that's why I think it's the best.
Also, if it's a film which isn't about people jumping off helicopters, there's a 2-week cool-off period whereby in 2 weeks later you realise that actually maybe it wasn't that good.
It doesn't sound like it is.
It's got a little bit of it, though.
It could be a female assassin, potentially, with that time.
It's got Armenian gangsters running around.
Oh, yeah. Okay. That does sound like quite a good film, that one. It's about...
It's really good. It's about a sex worker who's working in a kind of strip club where you can get a little bit more if you know where to put the money.
Okay.
And she meets the son of like a Russian oligarch, like a billionaire 19-year-old. They have sex, paid for sex. And then he goes, I'll pay for you for the week.
Oh.
And he's like, okay. She's like, okay. They have like a weird week. And then they
basically, Cineworld card, essentially. I mean, but,
Of sex work,
yeah.
And then they get married, and then all hell breaks loose because the family of the oligarch child go insane.
Yeah.
And it turns into a big kidnapping thing, and it's really good fun. And it's grim because of, you know, there's a very grim element to all that sort of stuff, but also incredibly funny. It's a weird film.
Yeah. Okay. I'll have to check that out.
Big sounds recommend excellent. From me. Sounds anyway, excellent. Let's talk about the film we're here to talk about.
Yes.
Now, I've realised with these film corners, I enjoy it much more when it's a film that I've really loved and I can talk about it in a sort of positive way.
Yes.
Because when it's a film that I haven't enjoyed, you just feel like you're sort of, I don't know, just being a bit of a negative sort of...
Negative Nelly.
Particularly when, if you're someone who makes stuff.
Well, exactly that.
You're
exactly
aware that stuff can go wrong quite easily.
This week I have been editing my own short film, which I made last...
Yeah, you know, these things are sobering and humbling experiences.
Exactly.
And, yes, it's very easy to naysay, isn't it?
Exactly. But this film makes it quite easy to naysay, would you say?
I think that is fair. we're going to be replete with spoilers, by the way. If you are listening, we're talking Gladiator 2, and it's going to be spoiler central.
It's Gladiator 2, Revenge of Optimus. Does it have a...
They were onto a loser from the get-go, right? Because the Gladiator 1, like, great action film.
Which
great
I remember
film.
Being good, right? I think it's good.
It's also got a really simple story. Kapow. Yeah. Like, it's got a great world where there's the space for amazing visuals. You've got nice Roman vistas. You've got spectacular battle scenes with Goths. And you've got this really simple, here's this loyal
Visigoths.
Guy. He's been he's been hard done by the suits in City Hall. He's going to have his revenge. Lovely. This is, like, plot-wise, it's all over the place, right?
But also it's the same story as well.
It's the same, but it's more complicated. And you have to remember, like, I didn't even remember there was this kid called Lucius. I mean, I did need that reminder.
Was he in the film, or did they reverse engineer him?
I think he was in the film, but I did need that reminder, like, how it looks like 25 minutes into the film, you're like, yes, okay.
Yeah, so this is the big spoiler, which is the main character in this, who's played by Paul Mescal.
Yeah.
Turns out to be the son of Russell Crowe in the first one.
Yeah.
Paul Mescal is doing a sort of Russell Crowe accent.
Yeah.
Because Paul Mescal's the Irish, so he's decided to go British because that's what Russell Crowe decided to do, right?
Oh, yeah, but Russell Crowe didn't exactly go full British, mate. Did he? My name is Optimus Septimus Maximus, son of a murdered brother, brother of a murdered son, brother-in-law of, well, technically not a blood relative, but...
Murder of loads of other people.
Gardener to my aunt, who's got some physical challenges. Her knees have gone.
So, hang on. Do we have a structured approach to this or not? What are we doing? How does this
work? We're doing broad brush initially. Broad brush. Although Ben has introduced the lead, which I think is not a bad shout. He's up against it, this lad, isn't
okay,
he?
Okay, Mescal. So, okay, let's talk.
I've never seen a Mescal film before, by the way. This is my first Mescal.
He's not given much to do that's very interesting, I would say, in the man's defence.
I'd say he's beefed up, obviously. He has beefed up. I thought his body was very beefy.
Yeah.
And it kind of... His body had beefed up in a way where it almost looked uncomfortable for him to be that beefy. Do you know what I mean? Like, it looked... Just even in a static pose, it looked like he was in slight pain just from how beefy he got. Because right. I don't think he's got the... I didn't think
well,
he's got frame.
You lobby for beef restraint, don't you?
I do lobby for beef restraint.
You can over beef.
You can over because I don't think he's got the scalp. I don't think he's got the body shape to take on that much beef. So actually, the muscles look kind of lumpy. Mm. I don't know. He didn't look very healthy. But I mean,
this plays into what I think about Paul Mescal, which is that I think in terms of sex symbols, right, and people who are thought of as being really good looking.
Yeah,
Nigel Havers.
Not Havers.
Top
of the list.
Havers.
All the long day.
Which is Havers, isn't it? Well, Roger Moore, Havers.
Jesse Plemons playing Havers in the Havers biopic.
Yeah. So, yeah, classic, classic symmetrical looks. Is that what you like, Ben, isn't it? Symmetry.
Well, what I'm saying is, like, I can, you know, I'm a straight bloke, so I don't really, it's not like I fancy these people, but I can often go, look at him, he's a handsome bloke, and I can understand why women would find them attractive.
Yeah.
Paul Mescal, for me, just looks like any man you'd ever meet, and he just looks like a normal man. Do you know what I mean? He just looks like a normal man that you would meet in a petrol station.
Well, you'd meet him as in a pre-assigned meeting. You'd rendezvous with him in a petrol station.
Okay, what I want to say is for the last 2 years, I've been meeting Paul Mescal every Thursday evening at a petrol station in West London.
Yeah, there is that petrol station meeting app, isn't there?
Yeah. It's not, but people think it's sexual. It's not sexual. You just meet up.
Yeah.
And you discuss. Petrol station, you just talk about your week, don't you? But it feels illicit because it's in a petrol station. It adds a certain frisson to it. And it's so hard to bond with people these days, especially with social media and so on. It's so hard for people to actually get to know each other.
And what's useful is there's that bank of newspapers under the sort of the plexiglass thing.
That's right.
Yeah.
So you can just look at all the headlines, talk about those.
Yeah.
Oh, there's loads of chat fuel.
So, but do you know what I mean? Like, I don't think he's an obvious action hero in this. Like, well, as you say, it doesn't fit him in some way. Or am I just being mean about Paul Mescal?
Well, I think he. I think Paul Mescal can take you saying he's not that sexy.
Do you reckon?
I reckon he can.
After the bond that we forged over 2 years of Thursday night petrol station rendezvous,
I think he would be saddened.
Okay.
I don't. I think he. I think part of the trouble he had is that, like, Russell Crowe in the Gladiator. He's being compared to Russell Crowe, who in Gladiator 1 had some quite nice bits of oratory to do. Right. It was all very clear. Yeah. Right. Strength and honour, which only comes very, very late in this film. And then, and if you see that you're in the cornfield and you're not before you are already dead. Do you know what I mean? It's like it's all done.
Yeah.
Whereas his oratory stuff was really rambling and wobbly and all that. Like, it wasn't. They didn't give him good speech.
He had a thing he said a few times, because the quote from the first film, which gets reused in this one quite a lot, is "What we do in life echoes in eternity, mate."
Yes.
Yeah. So that is quite a good line, and that gets used again in this one. But his main film, one of the lines he has in this film, which I thought wasn't regular.
Last weekend's prawns have been echoing all week. Do you know what I mean?
Oh, mate, tell me about it, mate.
So basically, no, but whereas the line he had in this one was something to do with
"where death is, we are not, and where we are, death is not."
That was a bit like, it just wasn't very, they needed to get like a parliamentary sort of speech writer. It wasn't very good speech writing. Do you know what I mean?
It wasn't clear.
They needed to bring Cicero back from the grave.
They needed to get Cicero in.
Or at least like Dominic Cummings.
Exactly, yeah. It needed a Cummings touch, actually. It needed that, you know, make Britain great. What was it? No, take back control. It needed a bit. It didn't have, because it was where death is, we are not.
Yeah.
It just wasn't very strong. But Russell Crowe, things, Ben, you're slacking off Paul Mescal's face. Now,
not just his face.
His whole bod.
His whole manner.
But what I'd say is Russell Crowe isn't traditionally good looking. He doesn't have a...
No.
Because basically a traditionally perfect face is, for example, Havers. You could take a mirror, put it in the middle of his face, and you wouldn't tell the you wouldn't know the difference.
Yeah.
Yeah? Because he's that symmetrical.
Russell Crowe wasn't thought of as being sexy, and that's not what they were going for with Russell Crowe, right? Whereas Mezcal is, like, for some reason, a huge sex symbol.
Russell Crowe is very good at rage, though. And yeah. In this film, I felt like we kept getting told, you have such rage, you have fury. I see the fury.
Yeah, but it wasn't there.
I was like, well, I don't see it. What are you seeing, Denzel? Tell me. And you have such rage. We're telling you. You have such rage. Whereas Russell, you can tell, seconds before they started rolling, he has been given a cold mozzarella panini.
he's genuinely fucking furious about it.
Absolutely, like he is.
And actually, Ridley Scott realised that actually the key to getting a great performance out of this man is keep giving him disappointing panini. had to have a separate secret conversation with the caterers.
A really stingy amount of pesto.
He'd be really stingy with the pesto. Hold back. And actually, we need the pesto. We need the amount of pesto to get less every day. So imagine a pesto parabola, which gets less and less, but never zero. Can't take the piss. He's an international star.
There has to be star. A smidgen of maybe even on the outside of the panini, so he can see it's there.
He can see it's
got
there.
Got access to pesto.
And obviously, the pesto will activate the smell sectors of his brain, which respond to pesto.
Yeah.
Basil, parmesan, pine nuts. Olive oil.
Which will then access cinematic fury.
That's the way. But
you're so right, Mike, in terms of that. We're meant to believe that this guy is like driven by this. He wants to bring down the Roman Empire because they killed his wife or something that happened right at the beginning and you meant to care about, but who cares? But it's just not there.
Also, can I say, his wife, they were fighting in a war. I mean, you can't get that pissed off. They were fighting in a war and the wife got killed. It's like, how dare they? What the... But like everyone was, it was a battle. I mean, that's what happens.
They were being invaded. They were defending an invasion.
Yeah, that is a strange take, Henry.
that's what I'm here for. Yeah, but she literally had armor on, and the arrow went straight through it. I mean, you want to look at your armor set. Sort of.
He should be angry. The armor.
It's very much
armor
the conqueror's take, isn't it? We did warn you. We flew our flag. You that heard is, our bugles.
No, that is conqueror's take.
If you don't want to arm yourselves properly, that's your lookout.
That's your bad. I wonder if we can frame this as a boomer versus Generation Z gladiator, sort of actor.
Okay, this is good.
I don't know if he is Gen Z, Mescal, but he probably is.
Yeah, so, I'd say he is.
Whereas, because I think Russell Crowe is very much boomer in the sense that he's like, fuck this panini, it's barely even a fucking panini. It's barely a panine. It's an Italian, it's a fucking Italian baguette, mate. Yeah? So he's boomer.
The grill lines are supposed to be drawn on in advance. I don't want it genuinely grilled, that's not the panini feeling. Yes, your microwave.
I want a microwave at 8 million degrees. I don't want it fucking grilled.
The cheese is supposed to burn my neck. My neck's not burnt. How do you think I get this voice? I don't get this voice when I softly grill panini. I get this. This is burnt to the core from hot, hot cheese. Do you understand? Panini is basically a fucking weapon. That's why it has a scabbard. Yeah. Where's my fucking panini scabbard?
So all that. So that's boomer. So like he's genuinely like. Probably a bit entitled and angry as a person.
Yeah.
Right? So he takes that. He's got brother-in-law energy, isn't he? He's a brother-in-law. He's a brother-in-law type.
Yeah.
He's just got a stupid, lumpy brother-in-law face. He's just a stupid, lumpy brother-in-law. Yeah. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. He's got a decent Audi that some fucker's just keyed. Exactly.
And that's why he takes that energy into the part.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Whereas Mescal, see, a thing about Mescal I was noticing is he's got these sensitive eyes. Like his eyes, he looks like he's about to burst into tears all the time. And I could see how that might be beautiful and attractive. He's just got these incredibly sort of soft, vulnerable. That's what, and I think that's a Gen Z beauty maybe that he's got. Because I imagine he was in his Winnebago going, oh, Uh-oh. I mean, I'd like a... I'd like a panini, but to be honest, it's not the end of the world if it's, I don't have a panini. I mean,
what are the crew having?
I'll just have whatever they're having, to be honest. And actually, I'll have a less good version of whatever they're having. Because we're all people at the same... You know, we're at the end of the day, we're all just trying to get by together. Yeah, I imagine he's a lovely, lovely, sensitive, sweet man. And they've tried to turn him into this ball of rage-like thing, but he's just like a gentle soul. And they've beefed him up. It kind of looks like... Imagine like a cute little bunny rabbit, and imagine it's been hitting the gym for like a year. It's all like a beefed up bunny. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
He doesn't have the eyes to be that beefy. So there was a kind of beef versus his eyes sort of conflict going on in him. But yeah, like he's not a truly sort of hard, nasty piece of work like I imagine Russell Crowe might be. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. No, that's it. I think you've nailed that.
He's also up against a less good nemesis, right? Because Russell had Joaquin Phoenix.
Yeah, who was incredible.
Who can do like creepy sadism like really well, genuinely dangerous.
So good, yeah.
And but like, also effective, right? Yeah. Whereas he's got, to begin with, he's got these really weird emperor twins who all the jeopardy is already reduced.
Yeah.
Because you know, but he doesn't know, but we know that there is already a movement to bring them down.
So yeah, like, yeah.
But also his other nemesis, almost before
Denzel Washington,
is Pedro Pascal's character.
Oh, yeah. That's right, yeah.
And the main thing we know about him is that he's like really nice.
He's lovely, a really lovely guy.
Yeah.
Lovely short, guy. Now and again, he has to do a bit of pogrom action.
Which he doesn't enjoy it.
Doesn't like it. No. Doesn't like it one bit. He'll do it, doesn't like it.
Yeah.
And so the whole thing is like, oh, your nemesis is this guy that basically when you meet him and you realise what's going on, you're like, oh,
you'll get on. If you were to meet in a petrol station, you two, you'd get
have a lovely time. Yeah.
And then it turns into Denzel. And I was thinking about Denzel. I don't think I can remember any film where Denzel has shown fear or vulnerability in any way. Like he will not. He's too cool.
I know what you mean, yeah. He was good, though, I thought.
He was good, but he was being normal Denzel. But even when he's at the point where he's having his hand chopped off and he's mortally wounded in the chest.
That was a great death, I thought.
It was a great death, but even then, Denzel, he will not do anything more than look slightly indignant.
It's true. He's always high status and like in control, isn't he?
Whereas at least Joaquin looks like terrified. And, you know, you feel like he's like, oh, no, I'm being killed out now. Whereas Denzel, you feel like, I knew this would happen.
But it's almost too strong. What's great about Joaquin Phoenix is he's weak, and that makes him much more dangerous and much more frightening. Yeah. Whereas Denzel's just too in control. The Emperors just didn't really have any agency, particularly, did they? The two twins, they didn't really do much. They weren't able to sort of pull anything off ever.
Although, to be honest, if I'm looking for things that I enjoyed in this film, the sort of weird double emperor thing was quite good fun.
It's true.
And then sort of, I mean, for me, the entire highlight of the entire film and the only bit I really enjoyed is when they had a party and there was it's the opening shot as a guy shaving bits off a rhino horn, off a full rhino head.
In the buffet.
In a buffet. It was like a rhino buffet.
Yeah. That was good.
I think my favourite bit was when he declared his monkey.
He had a monkey. He had a monkey sidekick friend in a dress. Monkey in a dress.
Who he declared sort of Lord Protector or something.
That was quite fun.
So, like, I enjoyed the sort of stupid, lavish parties being thrown by these guys. And the whole thing was that they had a party and the main event was going to be watching some gladiators fighting just in the party, just like basically in someone's living room.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed that. I sort of just enjoyed the kind of...
You liked a bit of Bacchanalian style room, proper kind of orgy sort of action.
Yeah. I just enjoyed it.
A lot of fruit and grapes knocking around, which is always good in a Roman...
I mean, I would have been sticking to the rhino meat. I mean, the rhino just looked... Yeah. The rhino, it was like a rhino head surrounded by sort of foliage.
Which I assume the horn is like aphrodisiac stuff, right?
I guess so.
Yeah, there were scraping bits
off
the horn.
Great steaks from the flanks. And if you're feeling a bit heavy after that, then you get some horn powder.
Yeah.
And you're good to go all over again.
So those bits felt enjoyable because they were just a bit silly and fun. And I was like, this film isn't working for me as you say, as a kind of, we've got this terrifying man, what's he going to do?
Yeah.
That is not firing. So what I can enjoy is just the stupid sort of silly little party bits. And
effete kind of like evil emperor. That scene was well portrayed. I thought Tim McInerney was really good.
Yes.
And there's various British actors like pop up playing like really like horrible old senators and sort of stuff.
Matt Lucas did quite well. A nice turn from Matt Lucas.
Yeah, Matt Lucas.
Yeah,
Matt Lucas's
bit. He's great.
Yeah, Matt Lucas was good.
It was a good bit.
There's a bit where they kill Derek Jacobi, which I felt like, don't kill Derek Jacobi.
He just popped up basically to get killed. Yeah. It's great, good to see, like, you'll get some really good old British actors popping up and just getting their heads locked off. Getting slaughtered. Which is nice. I'd like to talk about... I sometimes think that we should have a section called Henry Packer's Credits of a Film Bit.
What?
Okay. I haven't thought that through. Credit sequence corner with Henry Packer.
Okay.
We'll talk about the credit sequence. But it's already film corner. But what do you think of the credit sequence?
The beginning or the end?
The beginning.
Oh, the beginning.
What they did was they showed.
We saw a bit of wheat, didn't we? We saw sort of some.
There was wheat.
Exactly.
Whoever animated the Aha's Take On Me music video did.
Oh, that's right. Yes, they sort of painted over the film, basically.
Had a go at the old one.
You see, that I thought was quite disappointing because that was. Basically, there was bits from the first film, but with a kind of painterly effect over them happening.
Yes.
Which I think, like, maybe 5-10 years ago, that would have been quite impressive. But now that is literally just a lot of something you could. There's an app on your phone to do.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, that felt very much like. I think the other thing that looms large in this film is that Ridley Scott, the director, is 86. I think.
Yes. Well, that's why literally that looked to me like something which maybe one of his grandchildren had said to him. No, look, you can do this on your phone, and he was like, "Oh, that's amazing."
That's what I mean. I think it's the sort of thing that's impressive to someone who was born in the 30s.
Yeah.
But to anyone now, it's the sort of thing you could press a button on a computer and it would just happen.
Yeah. Okay. So I did notice that about the credits. But the other thing I'd like to talk about is this is actually quite a good Hammer Hair.
There was a lot of Hammer Hair.
It really kicked off with a big Hammer Hair. Yeah.
And so, finished and bookended with Hammer Hair. Hammer Hair.
So, yeah, exactly. And the Hammer Hair has kind of developed over the film. So it started off with a real, like, quite a gentle kind of Hammer Hair. Yeah. Because it started in North Africa, didn't it?
Yeah.
So there was a kind of slightly North African kind of Hammer Hair vibe.
A man, a handsome man holding some grain.
Holding grain. Yeah.
Yes.
And
he's got a beautiful wife.
They beautiful don't have any wife.
Kids, so they've got a lot of probably spare income and leisure time and things.
Yeah, they've got a goat.
Decent holidays.
They've got a goat that's frolicking around.
Yeah, exactly. They're out. Maybe three, 4 nights a week, these guys, you know.
Yeah. And you know that instantly, you know that wife isn't lasting beyond 5 minutes.
Oh, yeah.
Because he's there. It's an idyllic scene. Grain is going through his hands, which is something that everyone still to this day is one of the main pleasures in life, isn't it? In all of our lives, is having grain go through your hands. There's a donkey frolicking about. I mean, a goat. But it might as well have been a donkey.
it was a proper full narrative undergirding wife, right?
Yeah.
Like
literally
only there so that he can be angry
to create a revenge.
Yeah.
Sort of. Yeah.
Like, but in the most crap way I think I've seen in ever, maybe almost.
Yeah.
I don't think she has a line, does she? Or she says something like, "Don't worry, my sweet." I don't know. It's like nothing.
Yeah. And it was.
She's basically an extra, but then. She's meant to be the whole thing that's driving this whole film, right?
Yeah, but she's also, she's the parent, she can do laundry and archery. Do you know what I mean? This is not just any woman.
Yeah.
Okay, this is not any couple.
She's the best archer as well.
Oh, yeah.
That's why they have to kill her.
Yeah.
But you know, the Hammer Hair, I just want to say at the beginning, so it's quite kind of Moroccan Hammer Hair. So it's like, but it's quite gentle at the beginning.
But Henry, can we let's not give them too much credit. Like, I don't think it was Moroccan Hammer Hair. I think
that's the point. That's the point of Hammer Hay.
Exactly. Hammer Hay doesn't, you know.
It's a completely generic sort of thing.
Yeah.
But I noticed there was a kind of, it was very, very.
Hammer Hay abhors adjectives.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. But it was like, there was a kind of almost, there's a kind of Hammer Hay which is like quite nasal and almost on the in breath. It's like Hammer. It's like Hammer. There was quite a lot of that at the beginning. But then there was points later on where it was like, Hammer Hay. It got quite, like, over the film, you could trace the kind of Hammer Hay evolved and changed. And
they adjusted the Hammer Hay to meet the temperature, the emotional temperature of the film.
But I think Ridley Scott is very much in the Hammer Hay school as a director, probably. It's probably a generational thing.
Yeah, definitely. But he just, again, it's the sort of thing where, with the composer, they probably had a sort of 10-minute meeting where he went, "And just give us some of the good stuff, would you?"
Give us some of the Hammer Hair. We've only managed to write some really boring sort of pre-battle speeches, Mezcal, so we're going to have to ramp up the Hammer Hair a little bit. We haven't It's a bit dithery. The rhetoric's poor. But
we're going to have to really, really hit it with
just a bit bored now.
I reckon they would have auditioned like 5,000 people to get the right voice for that Hammerhead. I think a huge amount of the energy would have gone into the Hammerhead.
Yeah.
Oh, Mike, that's a good point there. About like, so there's a lot of rousing speeches and sort of public style rhetoric in the film.
There also often doesn't need to be. Like, I mean, even with the, like one of his last ones before with his gladiators, because there's no journey with the gladiators. Like, they get on really well, all the gladiators, from the get-go.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's really like someone makes a joke about, oh, you bit a monkey. Hoo-hoo-hoo. And if Russell Crowe had just bitten a monkey and you took the piss out of Russell Crowe for biting a monkey, he's biting your fucking face off.
He's biting your face.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah?
Yeah.
He's shoving you in a panini and he's having at you. Whereas this guy's like... Yeah, it's important to laugh at yourself, isn't it?
What are you on about? You're supposed to be full of rage. You're supposed to be full of rage.
Just to fill in for people who haven't seen the film, the kind of general plot is Paul Mescal, son of Russell Crowe, was sent away to Africa so he wouldn't be killed when he was a child. And he's back now because he's been captured as a prisoner of war and turned into a gladiator. And then we watch him be a gladiator. And he wants to take down the Roman state. The first thing he has to do, is it the first thing was when it's them versus loads of monkeys?
Yeah.
I thought they went in really hard to start with monkeys. Yeah,
They weren't just any monkeys, were they?
Well, they were like CG enhanced.
Each one was the size of a Citroen Saxo. Yeah, quite.
But that's what I was going to get on to. Is like, I don't think this species exists, right?
No, it's a fictional monkey. And there are monkeys out. And look, as a podcast, we're not ashamed of saying this. We are gibbon rather than baboon, aren't we?
We're gibbon leaning, certainly.
We're gibbon leaning. We're a gibbon.
Long arms, long spindly arms.
We're a gibbon leaning podcast. Yeah. Whereas they were very much baboons, weren't they? But they're like baboons are evil. And, you know, as my take on baboons is they're already evil enough looking without needing to like CG enhance them.
They really juiced them up. It's really weird.
They really juiced up that
they all had. They looked like they'd all had that kind of mid range drug dealer sort of BMW lacquer or Range Rover lacquer. Do you know what I mean? They'd been.
Yeah.
They've been wrapped.
So they've been wrapped. Yeah. That's exactly it.
Yeah. But they did a thing to kind of make their screams look bigger. They're going the classic baboon
their
scream.
Mouths were as long as the mouths of crocodiles.
Yeah. Yeah.
Heads were absolutely minuscule.
Yeah.
And beyond that, they were absolutely hench.
I would love to, is it based on a species that has since died out but was around in the Roman times? Like, or did they just go, we were going to do baboons, but they look a bit too friendly.
Yeah.
So let's sort of cross them with a sort of evil.
You see, again, I think it might have been one of Ridley Scott's grandchildren that had an app on his phone saying, I can just sort of enhance the baboon a bit for you. And it would have blown his mind.
I've got this app, granddad. It's called Jim Boy My Monkey. So you just take a picture of a monkey.
Yeah.
And you just press plus until he happened.
And you just mashed the plus until it couldn't go anything. You mashed
it up.
Because the same thing happened with some sharks. Later on, there were some sharks which had been CG enhanced a bit.
They look even worse.
Yeah, to look even scarier than sharks.
But I think this stuff did happen, right, in real life. So I think it's all historically based.
I think it isn't.
They had ill-treated menageries of interesting animals, for sure.
And they did fill the Colosseum with water. I don't know if they would have put sharks in. Probably not.
Yeah.
Because how would you transport a shark back then?
It's a job of fucking work, isn't it? For whoever gets that, we are gonna need to get these back in the urns at the end. By the way, Quintus, and that's your job.
Yeah, you have to just be constantly pouring water over it from an urn, wouldn't you?
So this is kind of the first half is like a sequence of fights, basically, where he has to fight various stuff.
Well, but this is another thing I thought was quite interesting about the film was. The structure of a gladiator movie is scene of gladiatorial fight, followed by some scenes of people talking in high-ceilinged rooms with big chunky brickwork.
Being eavesdropped upon by...
Being
by
eavesdropped upon...
A treacherous slave.
Yeah, exactly. Conniving.
Yeah.
and then sometimes being stabbed. There might be a stabbing in there. Then back to another big set piece of gladiatorial arena. Then it's back to story stuff of conniving in rooms, then back to the gladiatorial arena.
Bit of an orgy in the background, a couple of eunuchs. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So I started to notice that they had to kind of fit it into the story where they keep on going, Well, let's sort this out at the gladiatorial arena. And so they give them, and then you cut to the, say, like, we need to punish this woman. Let's do it in the gladiatorial arena. Let's do it tomorrow at the gladiatorial arena. So, like plot things kept on having to happen. Let's just do it at the gladiatorial arena. Do you know what I mean? They kept on solving problems by doing it at the gladiatorial arena.
It's only down the road.
Yeah, it was at the gladiatorial arena.
Yeah, because this is a big spoiler, but Denzel Washington's character kills both the emperors, but he kills one of the emperors at the gladiatorial arena. And so if you're planning to murder the emperor, why would you do it in public in front of 10,000 people? And he sort of does it in this, like...
Yeah, exactly.
He tries to do it in a secret way by basically pushing a tent peg into his ear.
We didn't know he'd been carrying a tent peg with him the whole time. And presumably there was a scene that got cut from the original edit where you see him, like, you know...
Working in millets.
Buying a tent peg or something.
It's the way you finish off someone who's annoying you at Glastonbury, isn't it? Someone pulls out their own guitar or whatever.
But I think that's a good example of, like, them having to put all the action in a gladiatorial arena.
At the gladiatorial arena. There was no reason to be at the gladiatorial arena. Yeah. Then they're going to execute his wife, the mother. Let's execute her at the gladiatorial arena. And so also, let's do it. Rather than kill this general or person, which we could do now, why don't we put them in a 50-50 situation where they could win the battle by doing it at the gladiatorial arena? Do you know what I mean? Because then you're arming them and putting them in a situation where they could actually win, whatever. Yeah, so there was a lot of that.
Yeah.
There was too much public speak. Okay, here's the thing that I noticed. There was quite a few situations where a character had to be talking effectively to the whole of Rome.
Yes.
So I had a lot of thoughts about, can everyone hear this person?
Oh, all the time. I always have that with any Roman amphitheatre.
Yeah, the whole time I was like... It's so good we've got PA systems these days.
The guy in the mini Colosseum, the guy in the provincial, like the sort of equivalent of kind of like the Reading Colosseum, where they have the monkeys, he had a loudhailer. He had like a sort of traffic cone loudhailer. Matt Lucas has nothing.
But then in the actual Colosseum, they were talking at like speaking level.
Matt Lucas is giving it something.
Yeah, he is, but...
And then you're just trusting there's some brilliant Roman acoustic engineering thing. When the emperors speak, they're just like,
thanks for coming to the Colosseum, guys. Thanks.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's hear it for your MC, Matt Lucas.
And I think like there must have been people, loads of people going, what's he saying? And also because at the end, he talks to two huge armies, and he's basically chatting to them about sort of changing the future of Roman society by literally talking to everyone in Rome. Do you remember at the end?
Yes.
There's two huge armies. He's going, maybe we should all get together and try and live in a better Rome. It's like, what the fuck? Why is everyone... And suddenly it's like, it's the whole film about Rome, is it? Like, and he starts talking about how, because we could live in a city with, you know, nice open spaces where, you know, you can walk to work in theory. It could be a...
Quite a lot of bins around.
Loads of bins.
It's basically...
He's pitching this vision of
it's
Rome.
It's very rare for a Hollywood movie. It's basically like a sort of New Labour manifesto.
Yeah,
what's going on. Because he's very much like, we need to reinstitute like regulation and democracy in our taxes. We need to see the product of our taxes. And people should pay tax because, you know, we get this in schools and roads and
everyone benefits.
And so on, as opposed to the sort of libertarian and... Whereas Denzel Washington does a kind of American dream speech where he's like, I started as a slave, I was owned, and now I am the emperor. Where else can you do that but in America? Sorry, in Rome.
Yeah, that's true.
Yes. Do you know what I mean?
That's true.
So it's a very rare,
Yes, because it turns out the whole film really is that he's actually been fighting for to dare to dream of a better Rome.
Yes.
Exactly, but like, is that what it was about?
Which is quite a woolly concept that you don't really care about.
But also for vengeance about his wife and also because he was cross about his mum.
Yes.
Yeah.
And probably something else.
Well, they also made him fight a massive monkey. So he'd probably be annoyed about that.
He'd be cheesed off about that as well. Whereas with just Crow, it was just clear. Russell Crowe had a kind of proper like platform game boss level thing. I've just got to keep fucking killing my way through these bitches until this bastard comes and faces me.
Yeah, that's so true.
I'm going to get there. I'm going to kill my way there. I'm going to kill all my way there.
Yeah.
That's it.
Which is exactly how he solves problems in real life, Russell Crowe.
Exactly. It says buy one, get one free. It's a
£5 all-you-can-eat buffet, so I'm going to kill my way up to the little the duck rolls. I'm going to kill my way there.
That's what he does. So a lot of rousing speeches to the whole of Rome. It was quite comical at the end when they had to show an entire society changing its mind about something. You've got the soldiers going, maybe it would be nice to have a pedestrianised town centre. So I think we've been quite negative on it. I think it is a bad film.
Let's find the positives, people.
But let's find the positives with Henry Packer. little section. No, but I mean, positives were, I quite enjoyed the hammerheading.
Yeah.
The positives, I felt the film, it kind of lost me. It started off by losing, so I didn't have me for quite a while.
Yeah.
I kind of got into it, I got out of it again, but I weirdly got back into it again. I think the sheer stupidness of it, it sort of won me over weirdly by the end. I was like, this is a big, stupid pack of prawn cocktail crisps. It's basically a rubbish thing, but I'm going to eat it. Do you know what I mean? So it's like, by the end, it was just so stupid. It was just, it almost weirdly won me over again, weirdly.
Do you have a positive, Mike, that you can...
I've got a couple of positives. One is that they definitely made, in the opening battle sequence, they'd made the effort to please people who enjoy massive battle scenes in movies by, you've got to mix up the weaponry, right? So they'd included some great big siege weapons right on the front of the boats.
Yeah.
And there would have been, you know, provincial middle-aged men up and down the country, they would have enjoyed that immensely.
It's true. I did like the siege.
And that was a nice thing to do for those guys, basically. Yeah. I enjoyed the little monkey, and I enjoyed that for the first time in a long time, you know, we're talking about tertiary syphilis. Do you know what I mean?
That's true. That does come back, get mentioned, doesn't it?
It's not part of the conversation.
Which these days is curable.
It is curable, people. Just get your penicillin down you, and it's just not, you don't need to go mad to the extent of causing riots and
killing your brother.
It's like the common cold now, isn't it? I mean, if I was to tell you, you know, I think I was telling you just the other day that I had a bit of syphilis or whatever. It's just not a big.
It's just dealt with by the end of the afternoon, isn't it? You didn't kill your brother, did you? You didn't kill anybody. You didn't, yeah.
I mean, if you had a bit of tertiary syphilis, that might be more of a problem.
It's harder. You're better off dealing with it early doors, certainly.
Don't get to the stage where your empire is crumbling.
No.
I'm trying to think of a positive because you've all added one.
Yeah.
I mean, I have to say, I just really enjoyed them all fighting these big crazy monkeys. If it had been 90 minutes of those characters having to fight massive hench monkeys,
I'd
have been happy.
Yeah.
So I sort of enjoyed that. I enjoyed some of the fights bits, you know, because I wasn't having to engage with the plot or lack of character.
I'd have liked to have seen the hench monkey bit where they live in the back. Do you know what I mean? Like the gladiators. You see the gladiators. I'd have liked to see them chilling out, having a bit of lunch, doing a bit of probably lots of arm wrestling going on, that kind of stuff, playing darts. I'd like to see that.
More of a sort of sitcom vibe.
The sort of rec room. The Mega Baboon rec room.
The Mega Baboon's what they're up to.
Oh, there was a whole other character, wasn't there? Who was this bloke who used to hang around with the gladiators, who was like an ex-gladiator, but who's now a doctor. And he was totally pointless.
But I think he was mainly there because it's important in this kind of film to have a kind of quite a grisly bit of stitching that you see happening on a wound.
Oh, I didn't like that at all.
You're going to have some grisly stitching.
Yeah. Yeah. If that's happened to me, I'd just be going, oh, God, no, no. No, stop it. Oh, man.
For me, I'd be like, right, the story would end for me at that point. I'd be like, right, I'm not continuing with this. I can't.
Have you washed your hands? Have you got any Savlon? I can't find my Savlon anywhere.
And there's a fun sort of bit where they did like a kind of rodeo with the rhino. I enjoyed that.
Yes. Yeah, rhino guy. He was a bit of fun, wasn't he?
There's a guy that got gored big time. Enjoyed that.
Yes, well, I did feel sorry for that rhino because he got his horn smashed and it's not his fault. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, but he is he's very obviously CGI. So,
Yes, we can take some comfort in that. Yeah, so his horn will be repairable.
Well, that's Gladiator 2, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You've been warned.
Yes.
So I'm going to give 2.5 hot beans.
Out of 10 beans?
Out of 5.
Okay.
Today.
All right.
I think, well, I mean, I might have given it 3. You guys are starting to talk me down about it.
I'm going to give it two beans. It's going to go under the 50. And bear in mind that I'm also like I'm a very easy audience member to please with this kind of stuff.
Mm. Yeah.
But I had a lovely evening. Don't get me wrong. I saw my old friend Jim. He made us shawarma. We had a drink. We had a lovely time.
Oh, that sounds nice.
I enjoyed it enough. Mm. But if it was just the film, it wouldn't have been enough.
It's true. You know, now I come to think of it, I did spend a lot of the film thinking about. Well, I think this is another test of how good a film is, thinking about my own legs, which we've talked about before.
Also, Henry, do bear in mind you were eating a pizza as well.
It's true. It was a really disappointing pizza.
But, oh, really?
Please never eat a pizza thinking about your own legs, people. That's just because it's not.
It's quite dangerous. Yeah. But no, I do remember sitting in the film thinking, I wish this was over and because I want to go home. I thought that quite a few times during the film, actually, like I'm thinking.
That's usually a bad sign.
It's usually a bad sign, isn't it?
And I think I'll give it 2.5 as well.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Not a disaster, but not a great film. Plemistential?
Loads, I'd say. I think he could have popped up in loads of different roles.
He would be, he'd be spoilt for choice with Plemons, I think, in that.
I mean, they could have CG'd Plemons' faces onto those baboons, couldn't they?
Very easily.
That would have been quite good.
And even as the guy riding the rhino, I think I would have liked to have seen Plemons as a gladiator of great renown.
Yes, raising his helmet and you realise it's Plemons.
It's bloody Plemons, but he does get offed. But he would have been good as one of them.
Yeah.
Or just hanging out in the party in the orgy. Just I would like to see what Plemons would have chosen as a performer to go in that party. You know, what's his vibe within that scene?
I think you could have done a sort of thing with CG where he plays both the Emperor Brothers.
Yes, and the monkey.
And the little monkey.
And the little pet monkey.
Yeah,
that's a nice idea.
He's up to it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there we are. That's right, these are two. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you very much.
See you next time in the... We've established now it's quite a crap cinema lobby,
smelly, dark.
Oh, it's going to be flats by the end of the year.
It's going to be flats.
With a little Tesco at the bottom. Don't worry about it.
Bye.
Bye.